And Jesus concluded there in Mark 10:9 with, "What therefore God hath joined us together, let not man put asunder." That was how Jesus concluded his teaching before all of the crowd. And today we are again going to deal with a very difficult subject. In fact, it's the same subject again. And we will find there's a change of place, a change of target audience, and also a change of tone. And God's desire, though, remains unchanged. And so as we go into this message, just as I asked last week, please do not be thinking in this message emotionally or based upon circumstances or the things that have happened in your life, but instead ask the one question that is most important when we come to the Bible, which is, where's God's side? I want to be on God's side. This is not about us choosing our friends and eliminating those who are not friends, but this is about us finding God's will. This is about us understanding His intentions. This is about us coming in line with Him. I think today's message could rightly be titled, "The Poisons of Sin." Or it could be titled, "A Discussion About Adultery." I don't know which one's catchier. I think if you put that on the title, people will come out to hear either one of those, because it's a hot topic. It's a topic that divides very families by its nature. Today, though, we want to get Jesus and God's perspective on divorce and remarriage and what He considers sin. We'll read starting in chapter 10, verse 1, and read down through verse 12 so that that you can see that I'm not taking things out of context, so you can see the setting once again. Mark chapter 10 and verse 1. "And he arose from thence and cometh into the coasts of Judea by the further side of Jordan, and the people resort unto him again. And as he was wont," or as was his habit, "he taught them again. And the Pharisees came to him and asked him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife? Tempting him. And he answered and said unto them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses suffered to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away. And Jesus answered and said unto them, for the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain," that is, the two of them, "shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain," or two, "separated, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." This is a complete teaching of Jesus to a crowd of multitudes. Now we come to a change of place and notice where it was, verse 10. "And in the house his disciples asked him again of the same matter, and he saith unto them, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another committeth adultery against her. And if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she committeth adultery." We have here Jesus speaking to his disciples. First, let us see that there is a location change. And then we will see the target audience. And once we have seen who is being taught, we will then look at what is being taught in verses 11 and 12. In verse 10, we find that it is a change of scene. They have been on the way between places. They have been out in the open. He was approached publicly by a group of Pharisees, and then he gave a teaching that was in the hearing of all. It was truth that fit both for those who were walking close with God, those who didn't know God very well, and those who were lost and completely gone away. It was for everyone. This teaching about the cementing of marriage, that God created marriage to be one, applied to all, not just to the Jewish rabbis or the Pharisees or the disciples or Jews at large, but to everyone, Jews, Gentiles alike, this rule applies. Our intention should be to keep together that which God hath put together. Now, the change of scene is into a house. I don't know how big this house was. We're not given any details about this house. But regardless, being inside means it was not a message that was carrying to every person. This wasn't necessarily applying in every person's heart or hammered away to them. This was something for this group and the people who were in the house with him. We then must notice this is the 12, the disciples. They are there sitting with him. These are the same 12 who have been with him and seen him cast out demons, through whose power they have done miracles. They have seen him feed thousands, heal, cast out demons, all of these things, walk on water, and they have heard him teach week after week after week. They have heard him repeat his messages, deal with the accusations and attacks. They have heard all of these things, and he now is addressing them. I want us to see that not only is it the 12, the disciples, those who had followed him at his request, who are here listening to these next two verses, but they ask him again of the same matter. I want us to see that the disciples, at least, did not understand or had some more questions after hearing Jesus talk about the purpose of marriage. They had some more questions. I think this is an encouraging thing for you and me. I don't know if you've ever sat in the pew and listened to a sermon and at the end come away saying, I've got some more things I need to think about. I have something that I need to apply in my life. How does this work? This is the same thing that these disciples had. They didn't know all that they thought they should. And they wondered. They were worried. In Matthew, we have more of a description of what their specific question was. But here we just have the description that they were questioning about that same matter, about whether we were allowed to divorce our wives or not. That's the question the disciples are asking. Jesus then gives them this very serious answer. And I think he was giving them an answer because it was one they could hold on to. It was one that was not just for a specific situation, but applies across many situations. He is giving them this teaching because he wants them to see that the problem with divorce is first what he dealt with before everyone. It is breaking something that God set in place. It is undoing God's work. We need to be getting behind God's work and encouraging and strengthening it, not breaking it down. But also, the other problem with divorce, remarriage, is the sin that accompanies it. The sin that accompanies it. Adultery is not pleasing to God. We already saw that. But now we find why we should not be pleased with divorce and remarriage. In verse 11, Jesus saith unto them, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another. And we're going to stop right there and just discuss what does this mean. Whosoever. this is applying to anyone. I want us to see how broad this is. He doesn't say in this passage, oh, except for in this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and list out a whole bunch of exceptions. This is the common rule that applies across the board. I want us to notice the condition. So it's anyone, but the condition is that they have put away their wife. That word put away is to have written that bill of divorcement. To have signed the divorce papers would be the way we might say it today. If someone signs those divorce papers and divorces his wife, that's the conditions. We should not here try to read in any other thoughts. We shouldn't try and read in our own understanding or what we want or the fact that our grandparents or our parents or our friends or our cousins or our neighbors have done the opposite of what is instructed here. Instead, let us see what it is that Jesus is telling us. And then let us consider whether sin is truly sinful. Because I think Jesus here is giving them instruction about divorce, remarriage, but he is also telling them that sin is sin no matter who is committing it. And sin is dangerous and deadly. Whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another committeth adultery against her. This is Jesus' teaching. Divorce is bad in that it is breaking a covenant, a bond that God has put together. But it is also wrong to remarry in that it causes us to commit adultery against our wife. Because remember, God's the one who made that first marriage. And if we marry another, we are committing adultery. This is a very serious accusation. I want us to note, Jesus does not here then proscribe a certain set of actions that should happen. If Jesus were to stop here and say he's committing adultery, what was the Jewish command? What was it that Moses had said when someone was caught in adultery? The answer comes back, stone them, both the man and the woman caught in adultery. Stoned in front of everyone. That sin not abound in the nation. That was the command. And so when Jesus says, committeth adultery, you need to be going this, whoa, adultery. Sorry, that was a bit farther than I meant. Whoa, adultery. It should shock us. We take it a little bit for granted in this world. People will casually sleep with others. But when you call it adultery, you are accusing something of something that is worthy of death in God's eyes. Something that is evil. It is not just all a mistake. All we're human. No, it is evil in the sight of God. Adultery is serious business. When Jesus said, committeth adultery, I think the disciples all took a step back. Maybe even if they weren't sitting down, they all like maybe tripped over because they were not expecting that. They would not be expecting that at all. It was so common in that time when Jesus was there in Israel for people to divorce and remarry. It was so common that the debate was just how small a thing it would take to have a divorce. But of course, divorce is good and remarriage is permitted. This was assumed good. So when Jesus calls that adultery, he is saying something very shocking. Not to re-preach last week's message, but some of the different camps that were debating how little a thing it would take to divorce one's wife, would go as far as to say if they broke a piece of crockery, or they burnt your supper, or if they said something mean about your mother, that was grounds to divorce. They had gone way far. They had gone to the extreme in allowing divorce for any reason at any time. And so to confront people who expect that divorce is not only a possibility, but is commonplace, and to say to them that it is adultery, that would be shocking. That would be shocking. Jesus here is putting it right in their face. It's adultery against her. Now, I want us to note, here Jesus is not making this some sort of spiritualized thing and saying, oh yeah, adultery, this is adultery, sorry, remarriage, this is adultery against God. You know, you're not being pure in heart towards God. No, this is specifically adultery against her, against your wife. This is breaking of a covenant that was made between a man and his wife. This is failing to abide by that oneness that God helped put together. This is adultery, but not just in a spiritualized, philosophical way. This is adultery in reality. Jesus says that marrying another is committing adultery against her. If Jesus had said it some other way, adultery in the eyes of God, or adultery against God, because there are times in the Old Testament where the picture of divorce or adultery are used by God of his people, Israel, where they have been adulterous with other gods before him. But here he is specifically speaking about the relationship between the husband and the wife being broken, not by a piece of paper, but being broken when they commit adultery with another, even though they have signed another piece of paper. Here, Jesus is making quite a dark line in the sand, a very deep chasm. Then verse 12, we have an instruction that goes way beyond the first. In the Jewish culture, it was extremely difficult, if not impossible, for a woman to divorce her husband. While it was extremely easy for a man to divorce his wife, it was impossible the other direction. That was the way they had read the rules, and that's the way they set it up. But Jesus continues and puts the shoe on the other foot. He says, if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she committeth adultery. Here we have the reverse statement. So the man on the one side is committing adultery against his wife if he goes and marries another. But now we have the wife, if she divorces her husband and remarries another, she is committing adultery. In the Jewish eyes, this was an impossible thing. This was the thing that the Greeks and the Gentiles did, allow the wives to divorce. And lest we think too harshly about the Jewish people, in the Roman culture, it was extremely common for both the men and the women to divorce for no reason at all. It had gotten so far that in certain parts of the Roman Empire, they had to make rules about marriage because there was no stability, and people would live with someone for a couple of years and then just up, leave, and go someplace else, and there was no consequences, and they had to put rules in place because it was destroying the possibility and opportunities for their children. And they had to build rules and regulations around that. And so here, when Jesus starts talking about the woman committing adultery, the Jews would have also seen this, not only as a Greek or a Gentile problem, but they would have thought that was the exact reason you give that bill of divorcement. The husband writes out, I divorce, I can't remember the full phrase, but it was this phrase quoting from the Old Testament, but I divorce my wife, hands it to her, and then she and he are separated. They're done. They're gone. And she then can take that piece of paper, and she needs to guard it well, and she can remarry anyone. That was what they thought that piece of paper allowed. That's what they thought that piece of paper meant. And so when Jesus says that the woman putting away her husband and being married committeth adultery, they're thinking, this sounds a bit like a jail, like a prison. You know, where else? Where else do you find people joined together? Not because they wanted to, but they're sticking around because they have to. This sounds like prison. I've talked to a number of people, unsaved people, who have said something similar, like describing marriage as the ball and chain, and the, you know, it's a prison sentence. Some even go as far as calling it a life sentence. You know, they look at it very much in those derogatory terms, but the disciples also saw this in that very same perspective. They saw this and they were like, who would want to get married? Who would want to get married if that's the way it's going to be? If there's no way out, you know, you're stuck with that person. What? Again, our perspective needs to be God's perspective. In verse 8, the twain, the two of them, one flesh, and they are no more two but one. They're joined together. They are bound together. No way out. That's the way we ought to be looking at it. For many Christians and for unsaved people, this teaching, both last week's and this week's, are too difficult. It's too heavy. It's like a burden that God is putting on us. Why would He do that? Make us a certain way and then give us all of this responsibility and pressure? Why would He do that? Well, God has His reasons, but first, we must recognize that it is not what pleases us that leads us into marriage, but rather what pleases God. God had intentions from the very beginning for what marriage would do in our lives. And He brought you and your spouse together. He is the one who did it. We talked a bit about that last week. He's the one who brought people together, whether saved or unsaved. He brought you together. You can't even pretend that it was you. What did they see in me? I don't know. That my wife likes me, I don't know how. God brought us together. This is the wonder of marriage. What God wants is for us to grow together, to start out close and then to become entwined, to start out together and then to work through years of life together, side by side, back to back, however you want to describe it, you know, fighting off the world, us two against the world. Here we have then how wrong it is to marry another. And then we'll briefly look at why God might have allowed this remarriage to occur. And as we mentioned last week, Moses allowed this to prevent some of the hardships and sins from abounding or multiplying. Not because one sin is better than another, but because multiplying the sins to make them more is more damaging. So we have the destruction of the marriage. Until you marry another, there is always the possibility of repairing a relationship. But once there has been a marrying of another, as it calls it there in verse 11 and in 12, marrying another, there is no permanence, there is only a piece of paper. Once you have committed adultery against your wife, you are breaking every single part of any vow that you made. You are breaking it. You are breaking it because the intention of God, dear Christian, is for us to be pure before Him in these matters of sexual issues before marriage. Pure. That's what He desires. And then while we are married, God desires us to be pure. One man, one wife, committed to each other. And then if one or the other says, I cannot, and they step away, yet God still demands that we be pure. When someone marries another, they have basically said, God, you brought me this one. What were you doing? To quote Adam from the garden, God, this wife who you gave me, she did. And we do the same if we go and say, God, I divorce this one. I'm going to marry this other one. We say, God, your choice for me was not right. And so we are spitting in the face of God. We are declaring what He declared good, bad. And then we are remarrying and we are claiming that our choice, our way, is better than God's. Cain tried that, didn't he? He did a sacrifice, but he did the one he wanted. He brought all of his own way, everything that he could do, and he offered it to God. And God said, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I told you to do. And we say, we will marry another. And then we take that which was meant to be for one only at all for all time, and we give it to another. This is sin against not only God, but against our wife. Here we could go on a long rabbit trail. And for those of you who like to do a little bit of study afterwards, we go on a long rabbit trail. And you could now insert all of the things where it talks about how a husband and a wife working together is good, and how if they are not working together, then it is actually hindering us. And how if you and your wife are not working well, and you are oppressing your spouse, their prayers are being heard by God and it is holding you back from blessing. And so if you have committed such a sin against your spouse as adultery, or if you have remarried and married another, not your spouse, you have committed adultery, and the consequences, they are long and they are heavy. The consequences, here we could go into all of the things that are additional to marriage. Do you know, it's really nice to be married and to have someone with whom you can be comfortable and who you can trust. And your trust in them and their trust in you allows you to know someone's got your back. That is an immense pleasure. That is great comfort. And that is part of marriage. And yet when you commit adultery, you break that entirely. You smash it to pieces. We could go on and discuss all of the different benefits. That was just the first one that came to mind. Was the trust that I have and the fact that no matter what I'm facing, my wife is there with me. She will have my back. She's also the first one I go to when I need advice or if I want to hear about how well I did in the last sermon. When we were first married, just to lighten the mood just a little bit, when we were first married, my wife would jokingly give me a grade on every sermon that I preached. she would tell me that, oh, that was a 5 out of 10, and that was worse. That one was a 3.5. She would grade me on them, and then she would tell me what, you know, I could improve. And that was of great benefit to me, because she would encourage me with the things that I'd done well, and she would tell me the things that I had done not so well. And in all of our life, our wives keep us in account. And wives, I'm sure it goes the other way as well, that your husband is one who can encourage and strengthen you and help you to thrive at what you are doing. And that is some of the blessings of marriage, and that is all broken when adultery is committed. That is all broken when you marry another. I want us to note here, Jesus is phrasing it in such a way that the person committing adultery, marrying another, is guilty of a capital crime, a sin of the deepest, darkest order. It is not here a casual, all committing adultery. It is serious. It is weighty. I promised you that we would look very briefly at the impact of this sin. And we have to perform a small thought experiment in order to do so. But if a Jewish person was to, before Moses gave the commandment, was to not want to be with their spouse anymore, and so leave them and go to spend time with this one, and then not be content with that and go to a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth partner, all the time breaking the covenant that they had made before God. They are multiplying adulteries. And so Moses saying, your hardness of heart, saying that you want to go and you're going to go regardless of what God thinks, I'm going to let you. I'll make it formal, and we're going to keep the sin from spreading. You can get remarried. But that will keep you then from going person to person to person and multiplying the sin and its effect. Because the only other alternative would have been for Moses to say, you want to break your marriage vows? God said they're not to be broken. It's time to put people who want divorce to death. And that would have meant there would have been no one left. Because in the Egyptian culture, just as in the Roman culture, just as in every time and place between Adam and now, there has been, in the heart of man, rebellion towards God, and it's easy to sin. It's easy to commit adultery. It's easy to go that route or to divorce your spouse. And so they would have had huge numbers of the people of Israel destroyed at that time. And so they made a concession for the people of Israel, not because it was good, but because it would limit the sin that was being committed. Here we find God's grace at work. God, so that they would not commit adultery after adultery after adultery, allowed them to write a bill of divorcement. But even still, his cry comes out, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. This should inform us about God's desire concerning marriage and God's reluctance concerning divorce and God's hatred concerning marrying another. That adultery should not be named among Christians. Christians should not support. We should not be behind. We should not be backing the dissolution of marriages that God brought together. We should not be promoting remarrying amongst those who have been divorced. Rather, we should encourage all to live pure, to live righteously before God. That's what we should be calling people to. God's side is walk right before Him. That's God's side. God's side is learning to live with each other. It's not always easy. It's not easy because we're all sinners. You and me, we're all sinners. It's not easy to maintain a marriage. It's easy to lose the love. That's the way the world would put it. And we can get into our habits of ignoring one another or ignoring the needs of one another. We can get into the habits of breaking one another's trusts. But we all need to reassess what is it God wanted from marriage. We'll see next week that part of that was the raising of a godly seed. And we immediately after this question, we have a question about children who are coming to Jesus. This is a great, great time to look at that. But it's based on the foundation of a good marriage. Marriages were God's intention to bring children and to raise them up before Him. That was His intention. It was also His intention to improve us through our spouse. It was His intention to bring us to our knees saying, God, I'm not capable. I'm not sufficient for this high calling. And then for us to be joined together and fruitful in all of our life, including children. That is God's intention. And so we have the poison of sin. Some Jewish people who had hard hearts, Moses then gave them a bill of divorcement so that no one would be murdering their wife, or so that people wouldn't go out and just have a license to sin. But God's intention was always the same. Avoid sin at all costs. Adultery, being the specific sin under view here, adultery is evil before God. It is evil because of its effects. Because of its effects on the marriage relationship, but also because of its effects on your heart. If you can ignore God long enough to commit adultery, then you can ignore God to your peril. Once again, the punishment for adultery, death, and that is what should happen if God were to judge us according to our sin. The world still sees God as that angry man in the sky, and that's a bad picture. But they rightly recognize that every sin should be judged. And God, if He were to judge us in the first instance of our sin, would have killed each one of us long before we ever reached maturity. Because each one of us had our hearts turned far from God. This is only one example of a sin that God is merciful towards and does not judge immediately. But it's still sin. Even though God's judgment has not been felt or seen in this lifetime, yet God's judgment does abide upon the wicked. And so this warning then goes beyond the married couple and goes to each one of us. Be wary of sin. Be wary of sin. It comes in many disguises. Sometimes it's things that the world praises. We'll finish with this last example. I had a friend in America who a few years ago wrote me a little message, and we had quite a strong disagreement over different chats and such. He took the position that because the government said it was okay for homosexuality, that the church should just go along with it. That it was good. That it was all right. And my contention to him was that what God condemns in the Old Testament and what God condemns in the New Testament are still things that God condemns in, insert this year. That was actually back about 12 years ago. So anyway, a number of years back, insert year. It doesn't change just because the society at large says it's okay. A society at large said, divorce, perfectly all right. Remarriage, go ahead. Sin is still sin. Even if you've got the government's approval, sin is still sin. You and I need to see sin for what it is, no matter where it hits. Whether it hits you while you're sitting here in the pew, or whether it hits you when you're at home, when you're in that place where no one can see and you are thinking the thoughts that you are thinking in your own mind, you need to be pure before God. You need to be walking righteously with Him. You need to see sin as evil and bad, and you need to condemn it. All of us have family, and all of our families are just as sinful as us. And most of us have been impacted by this divorce and remarriage issue. Yet I ask you, don't take the side of relative. Don't take the side of family. Take the side of God. That's the message today.